Hello, I'm Anna Maria Tremonti, and this is The Current. Well, we may feel the weather cooling in Canada, but down under it is beach season, and it may be wise to just stay on the beach because it is jellyfish season as well. What's more, their season and their territory may be expanding. The jellyfish, I mean. Lisa Ann Gershwin paints an alarming picture of how jellyfish populations are moving and growing in her book, which is called Stung, on Jellyfish Blooms and the Future of Oceans. Speaking on CBC Radio's Quirks and Quarks, she argued the health of oceans allows the jellies to make up for lost time.
Back in the Precambrian, about 600 million years ago, the oceans were dominated by jellyfish and jellyfish-like animals. There were no fish, there were no mammals or reptiles, and it looks a lot like maybe we're heading back that way. Certainly many ecosystems, as hard as it is to imagine, many ecosystems have already flipped to being dominated by jellyfish. We've lost the fisheries in those areas. We've lost many of the plants and animals that make up the biodiversity in these very disturbed ecosystems. So I don't know. I think it's a very scary thing that we could be heading back to a situation where jellyfish are dominating the oceans. But if we keep heading down the path that we're currently on, I'm not sure I see very many alternatives.
That is Lisa Ann Gershwin, the author of Stung, on Jellyfish Blooms and the Future of Oceans, speaking on Quirks and Quarks. Now, Professor Tim Flannery finds that scenario frightening. He's a scientist and the chief commissioner of the Australian Climate Commission. He's just written about Lisa Ann Gershwin's book in the New York Review of Books. And Tim Flannery is in Sydney, Australia. Hi.
Good morning. Great to be with you.
Well, it's nice to have you back with us. Now, you and other experts are warning about a spread of jellyfish. What makes you say that?
Well, what we see is that as fisheries have collapsed around the world, the species that compete with jellyfish are really being driven into economic extinction. And the things that normally eat jellyfish, like the sea turtles and so forth, they're really suffering as well. They're being caught in nets and disturbed on their nesting beaches and whatever else. So the kind of road's been cleared for the jellyfish, but a number of other factors have also started to work in their favour.
And what are those factors?
Well, we've seen with global warming that the acidification of the oceans, it tends to disadvantage anything with a shell or skeleton or whatever. And of course, jellyfish don't have any of that, so they're in good shape. With pollution, global pollution, we're seeing lowered oxygen levels in a lot of oceans, particularly places like the Baltic Sea and so forth and off the coast of South Africa. And jellyfish, they evolved in a very early time in Earth's history when there wasn't a lot of oxygen in the water, and so they're fine with low oxygen levels. In fact, some species can even store oxygen in their bell and dive like a scuba diver into oxygen-free water and feed. So they're kind of adapted really to the world we're creating for them now.
So what kind of jellyfish are we talking about here?
Look, there are many kinds of jellyfish, many hundreds of jellyfish. The biggest of them can weigh, 400 kilograms. They're huge things, down to little tiny peanut-sized things, which are some of the most venomous creatures on the planet. But, some of the ones that are spreading, really spreading around the world, were until recently reasonably rare. So it's an odd picture. Some seem to be spreading in ballast water. So, when ships come into port, they'll often, when they discharge their cargo, they'll take in some of the water in that port, keep it in the hold till they reach their next port of call, and they'll release it. And jellyfish seem to be using that means to spread from Australia, for example, to the Gulf of Mexico and other places. So they're moving around the world, and many species now are becoming quite abundant.
Now, there are some particular kinds that you have focused in on that are a problem. One is the box jellyfish. What is that?
It's a species that looks a bit like a gelatinous box. It's a squarish looking thing, probably 20 centimetres to 30 centimetres across. And it, if you get 5 to 8 metres of tentacle contacting your body, you'll be, likely to be dead in 2 to 4 minutes. So they are quite dangerous creatures. They're also the only jellyfish with eyes. They have proper eyes, and they can remember things. So, and they're active hunters. They
really?
Can move 6 or 7 metres a minute. These are the Formula One of the jellyfish world, and they're quite amazing creatures.
What about the Iru Kanji?
Well, that's a little miniature jellyfish in the same family or same group as the box jellyfish, but they're about the size of a peanut. And They were really a mystery for a long time. No one recognised them because they were so obscure, but we now know that a sting from Nyirokandji will make you vomit once a minute for 24 hours. I mean, it's pretty horrific. And you feel as if worms are crawling through your skin, you get incredible back pain, and this impending sense of doom. It somehow affects people psychologically, so they feel this terrible dread. And they on occasion, will ask their doctor to euthanise them just to, because they're so full of this sense of dread. A lot of people may have, you know, died of a heart attack before full symptoms set in, so we don't know how many people have actually been affected by these things.
And so when you're talking about the concerns about the growth in jellyfish numbers, is it solely the venomous ones, or is it all jellyfish that seem to be appearing more and more?
Look, the venomous ones are turning up in unexpected places now. So that little Irukandji has turned up. It was originally known from Australian waters. Just recently it's turned up off Cape Town and again off Florida. But it's so little studied, we don't know whether people are just seeing them now because there's greater interest in these creatures, or whether the species are in fact spreading. So those ones, it's a little bit unclear, but it's some of the more innocuous jellyfish that are spreading, like the Australian spotted jellyfish, that now it controls an area of about 60,000 square kilometres in the Gulf of Mexico, which is a zone of death. I mean, these spotted jellyfish are peculiar. They hunt by extruding jelly into the water, which slows down their prey that has to swim through the jellified water, and they also expel stinging cells into the water, so they create a sort of a curtain of death, you know, and any fish going in there really gets into trouble. So those species, which were once restricted to Australian waters, they're now spreading in places where they were really unknown before and creating quite a problem.
So what are the conditions in the oceans that are allowing that kind of migration?
Well, those species are probably travelling in ballast water, but they're reaching an environment that's pretty damaged. I mean, the Gulf of Mexico has a large anoxic zone in it where there's low oxygen, which suits jellyfish. There's a lot of pollution coming down the Mississippi River. The place is overfished in part as well, so the conditions are just right for it there. And, you know, when you think of these jellyfish, they can, some species can lay 10,000 eggs a day, you know. And if you cut one into quarters and think you've killed it, you haven't. You've just created four new jellyfish, you know. And some of these things, they don't even actually die. There's one species that I've kind of called the zombie jellyfish that, you know, if it does, if the bell does die, the organism dies and starts to rot, cells escape from that rotting corpse and reform another little jellyfish. So they're pretty, they've got some amazing tricks to get by in adverse circumstances.
So it you're saying it's a combination of things, though, overfishing as well, that allows these jellyfish to be in such large numbers?
Look, probably overfishing tips the balance. And I guess if I was looking at it globally, what I'd say is that jellyfish evolved in a world where there was no other complex organisms. They had it all to themselves for hundreds of millions of years until complex organisms evolved. And really the whole kind of, I guess, the weight of effort by things in the oceans in some ways looks like it's been really there to keep jellyfish in their place. So the evolution of fish and complex ecosystems has acted to really limit jellyfish. But as soon as we've damaged those ecosystems, the jellyfish have bounced back. And just to give you a sense of how they do it, you know, in some of the areas where there's been very heavy fishing for species like anchovies, anchovies numbers can crash, and then the jellyfish expand in number, but they feed on anchovy eggs and anchovy larvae so that they stop those fish species from ever recovering, stop the stocks from recovering. So there's sort of a permanent shift occurs in the ecosystem once these jellyfish get the upper hand. And it's very difficult to do anything about because they're present in such unbelievable numbers, truly astronomical numbers, and they change the ecology of the oceans. And once that happens, it's very hard to go back.
Can you tell us about the Black Sea? What happened there?
Well, that was another case where a species of jellyfish, just a small thing that looks a bit like a chicken's egg, really, and just like a see-through gelatinous chicken's egg, a species that was relatively uncommon off the New England area in the US, suddenly turned up in the Black Sea, presumably transported again by ship in ballast water. Again, anchovy fisheries were being depleted. The ocean was being damaged by pollutants coming in, and a big anoxic zone started to develop in the Black Sea. And these things just took off. And, you know, they were able to suppress all sorts of fish numbers just by eating the fish eggs. So in that tiny ocean, they are now totally dominant. They crippled the economies of three countries around the Black Sea. And the only thing that's altered that is the invasion of another jellyfish species, which each that particular jellyfish species and other things.
So what are you most concerned about if the jellyfish keep reproducing like this?
I think there is plenty of cause for concern that the human impacts on ocean ecosystems now are of such massive extent that we are fundamentally changing the way the oceans work. The kind of world we create if this trend continues is a truly horrific one. I mean, where the fisheries of the world, many of them will be destroyed permanently. I hope that a new balance can be re-established and that sensible fisheries policy and will be, you know, have it make a difference, and that limiting pollution will make a difference. But these things, you know, they have a massive impact. I mean, just to give you some sense of it, even on land, they have a huge impact. So the intake of nuclear power plants is frequently clogged by masses of jellyfish. Diamond mining operations off coastal Africa, the pumps are clogged by jellyfish. I mean, you know, some of the most powerful warships on the planet have been defeated by jellyfish, being sucked into their intake and overheating their nuclear systems. So, you know, they are an increasing problem on many fronts, and you know, I think we need to deal with it.
That's a pretty alarming picture. How worried should we be then?
Well, by the time I finished that book, I was terrified. I just think it's a great example, really, of how cumulative impacts, each one of which seems small, leads up to an overwhelming, dismal outcome for planet Earth. And, you know, I think that humans, we need to look at what we're doing in the oceans very carefully. And I am scared. And I think anyone who reads that book or the review I wrote of it should be scared as well, and hopefully galvanized into action to do something to better this planet of ours.
Tim Flannery, thanks for speaking with me.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Tim Flannery, Chief Commissioner of the Australian Climate Commission, and we reached him in Sydney, Australia. Well, not everyone's convinced jellies are coming back to recover what they lost in the Precambrian.
My name is Steve Haddock, and I'm a researcher at the Monterey Bay Aquarium Research Institute, and I run the jellywatch.org website.
Steve Haddock started the website to accumulate more information about what is going on in the world's oceans. He encourages people to send him reports, big or small, of what they see. He hopes to get a better sense of the actual jellyfish population. And at the moment, he says there's just not enough evidence to say there are more jellyfish. But where the jellyfish have been studied, he says the numbers are cyclical.
Every time I see one of these modern headlines about jellyfish occurring for the first time on this beach or for the first time in some long time, I think about this collection of old articles where they'll say Portuguese man-o-war found on beaches for the first time in 20 years. That one's from 1948. Or when the power plant gets closed by jellyfish intake, there's one talking about thousands of jellyfish weighing many tons recently choked the screens of the intakes of the city electric light company's powerhouse. And that was from 1937. So there's just been continually this rediscovery of the fact that there are jellyfish in the ocean. I'm sort of get offended, I think, by a lot of the headlines and the verbiage used, like plague or invade. They've been out there for 500 million years, and you've been going to that beach for 10 or 20 years. They're not really the ones that are invading that environment. It's their own home turf.
Steve Haddock also thinks the language used around jellyfish can be misleading.
People use this term jellyfish, but it's not really clear what they're talking about when they say that, because there's tens of thousands of species of things that people call jellyfish. And so when you say that, oh, jellyfish can be immortal, jellyfish are lethal, they can fertilize themselves, they can clog power plants, those are all different species. No one jellyfish has all those attributes. They've converged on having a gelatinous body, so they're sort of jelly-like, but actually in a lot of cases they're not evolutionarily related at all. And so it's just hard to generalize about jellyfish. It's like trying to generalize about plants or something. And are you talking about an oak forest or a redwood forest, or are you talking about the weeds in your yard? If we say plants are increasing or plants are decreasing, you know, it's kind of a meaningless statement because it doesn't take into account all the diversity of things that are going on.
Well, as for the argument that climate change creates a welcome environment for jellyfish, Steve Haddock says some of the jellies he studies would actually disintegrate, not thrive, as the ocean warms.
It's not impossible that certain species are rising and due to climate change. But in the jellies that I study, which I think are actually more representative of what's in the ocean, even if people don't encounter them, for them, there's really no evidence that they're increasing. There's a fair amount of them, and there have been for a while. So I wouldn't say it's not happening, but I would say that I haven't seen anything that is very convincing that it is.
There's a growing number of scientists working on developing that kind of evidence. And Lucas Brotz, a PhD student who works for the Sea Around Us project at the University of British Columbia Fisheries Center, is on this issue. He's researching how jellyfish populations are changing. We have reached Lucas Brotz on the west coast of Canada in Tofino, BC. Hello.
Good morning.
Well, you're in Tofino to surf, I guess, but are you still watching for jellyfish in those waters?
Definitely, yeah. I always have an eye out for jellyfish and always enter my sightings on jellywatch.org.
What have you seen?
In Tofino, I haven't seen too many. They tend to be more in the inlets, but I live on a tiny island just outside Vancouver and been there for about 11 years. And, of course, I've seen lots of changes there. Some years there's millions of jellyfish, and then the next year there'll be none. So it can be a real challenge to understand changes in their population.
Now, you released a study last year about the numbers of jellyfish worldwide. What did you find?
Well, we looked at coastal ecosystems around the world, and certainly as Dr. Haddock pointed out, there are many different species of jellyfish, and not all jellyfish are increasing in all places. We know that for sure, but we do see different types of jellyfish populations that appear to be blooming with more frequency or with more intensity or even sticking around for longer. So of all the systems we studied that we found information for, there was a fair amount of uncertainty, but we did see a recognizable trend where we saw increases in about 60% of the areas that we were looking at and decreases in only about 7%.
What do you know about why that might be happening?
Well, there's been a number of factors that have been linked to human impacts that could possibly make the oceans less favorable for fish and more favorable for jellyfish. So one of the biggest ones is invasive species. So ballast water from tankers transports invasive species of jellyfish all around the globe. And in some cases, they can thrive and just kind of take over the entire ecosystem. All of the other impacts are possible in theory, but they're really difficult to prove. These could include things like overfishing, where you remove predators and competitors of jellyfish, and that allows them to thrive. Coastal development that creates more habitat for jellyfish polyps. Global warming that we already mentioned, where some species of jellyfish can reproduce more, expand their ranges, possibly show up earlier and stick around longer. Even pollution that can strip the waters of oxygen and cause these dead zones. Sometimes jellyfish are less affected by that.
Now, we heard from Steve Haddock, who believes there is not enough evidence to say overall numbers are rising. Would you agree with that?
It comes down to, you know, what do you define as a global trend and how many areas do we need to identify where there's increases before we can say that, you know, this is happening. So, as I said, it's certainly not all species everywhere, but, you know, we're seeing increases in jellyfish in different species all around the globe, in Asia and the East China Sea, the Yellow Sea, the Sea of Japan, even remote areas like Hawaii and Antarctica, we're seeing changing populations of jellyfish and a lot of increases in recent decades. So, you know, we can argue till we're blue in the face about what constitutes a global trend, but one thing we know for sure is that some jellyfish species are changing and increasing in a lot of coastal areas around the globe, and I think that's something we need to pay attention to.
Okay, so that's not just a natural cycle as far as you're concerned.
You know, as Steve pointed out, we don't have the data going back in many places, decades or centuries or, of course, even hundreds of millions of years as jellyfish have been around. But, you know, when we talk to fishermen who've lived in these areas for decades, some places we do have good data sets that go back quite far. We see, you know, some variability in the signal, but also increasing population trends that I don't think we can ignore.
Now, he made the point that there's not enough evidence to say climate change is affecting world's populations of jellyfish. Why do you think there is evidence to make the connection?
Well, I think that climate change can affect different species differently. Some species of jellyfish are going to be negatively affected by warmer waters, but other species of jellyfish are going to benefit. So we've already seen some species of jellyfish expand their ranges because new waters become warmer. And there's been many experiments in the lab that show under warmer conditions, some species of jellyfish increase their reproductive output. So there's going to be winners and losers, but I think in certain areas that may just mean there's more of one type of jellyfish, which can cause problems.
Now, you know, there seems to be a bit of tension between scientists on this issue. A couple wouldn't even speak on the show because they disagreed with others. Why do you think the community of scientists that studies jellyfish is so divided about what's happening in our oceans?
Well, I think one of the good things about science is that we really want to make sure we get it right. And I think there can be a lot of, you know, uncertainty and generalizations when you're talking about jellyfish. There's a lot of different ways that you can go about this analysis, and I think it can get tricky when you start trying to answer, you know, is there a global increase? You know, when someone asks me, are jellyfish increasing globally, I often respond with, well, what do you mean by jellyfish? What do you mean by an increase? What do you mean by global, and over what time frame? Because you can sort of define those things differently and come up with a different answer.
How do you go about studying the numbers?
In the study that we did, we collected as much information as possible. Certainly, we had to be aware of reporting bias when we're looking at anecdotal data. So we didn't use things like headlines for Portuguese man of war or power plant shutdowns or whatever. Of course, because you put in a new power plant somewhere and it gets clogged with jellyfish. Well, those jellyfish could have always been there. You just added the new power plant. So typically when we used anecdotal data, it was just from interviews with fishermen who had lived in an area for a very long time, marine biologists that are keenly tuned to the marine environment where they work. And then, of course, we also gathered whatever scientific data we could get.
Pardon the pun, but they're pretty slippery when it comes to trying to count them, aren't they?
Slippery slope, indeed.
So what can you tell us about the prevalence of jellyfish in Canada?
Well, certainly we have quite a few different species along our coasts. Thankfully, none of the stings are too fatal. There's some that'll give you an annoying rash, but nothing like the sort of deadly box jellyfish they have down in the South Pacific and things like that. Unfortunately, we don't know that much about the jellyfish species along coastal Canada, but Fisheries and Oceans Canada does have some good data, and thankfully I've been working with some salmon scientists on the West Coast here who are now counting jellyfish in their surveys that they do for juvenile salmon, and hopefully we could do something like that on the East Coast as well.
So if your study's conclusion is that jellyfish populations are rising, what do you think we could or should be doing?
First of all, we just need to pay more attention to the marine environment and take the precautionary approach. You know, we can't continue to treat the oceans the way that we've been doing it without expecting some major changes. So we're also going to have to adapt. There's some cases where the jellyfish populations are really dominating in some areas, and we're going to have to sort of get used to having them around.
Steve Haddock said he was worried some people might overreact and look at ways to get rid of them. Do you worry about that kind of reaction?
On the one hand, yes, in that, you know, the jellyfish are they don't have any malintentions because they don't have any brains. So they're just doing what they're sort of wired to do. But I think that we may be able to find uses for them. Certainly jellyfish are used in many areas all around the world. They're consumed for food in Asia, and the global harvest for jellyfish by weight is actually more than the amount of lobster that are caught around the globe. So in some places, they're seen as a delicacy.
Lucas Brotz, thanks for your time and your insights into this.
My pleasure.
Lucas Brotz is a PhD student at the University of British Columbia Fisheries Center, which is part of the Department of Zoology.